Greetings, Raise community. Brent coming in live with a special episode today, not our typical format. We are fortunate to be able to welcome Michael Eicher, who serves as Senior Vice President for Advancement and President of the Ohio State University Foundation, along with Alex Lawrence, who serves as Executive Director for the Advancement Leadership Lab. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Okay, so this was sparked through a series of conversations, but one specifically with Justin Fincher, who was a previous Raise podcast guest, and he shared unbelievably positive reflections on his time at Ohio State University, but also mentioned how much he valued the creation and his participation in the Advancement Leadership Lab. And so that is really going to be the center of the conversation today. But before we dive into that, I want to welcome Michael and Alex and give them an opportunity to at least share a little bit about their own higher education and advancement journeys. And I'll start with you, Michael. How did you end up in this sector of advancement?
No, it wasn't planned. It was accidental.
It so rarely is, I will say. Now, I was 12 and I just set out. Now, there are a couple of people like David Bennett, who leads Howard University Advancement, talked about, I think he started as a student caller at UConn when he was 16 years old. So like once in a while, it is sort of preordained. But tell me your story.
It's true. And now as we are more mature as a profession, I think we're seeing some second generations, folks who, in fact, are more planned. I grew up in a family that was involved in the nonprofit world from my birth. The nonprofit was the YMCA. I grew up in YMCAs across the country. And when I graduated from college, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I was recruited by the flagship Y in the United States. It was a creative, energetic, research-based place that encouraged growth, it encouraged risk-taking, encouraged creativity, and it invested an awful lot in my growth and my career. It gave me the basis on which to start my leadership journey in some very serious ways. I eventually decided to leave the YMCA. The YMCA gave me great training also in fundraising and in all of the advancement skills. And it had produced some folks who had gone on to be serious fundraisers. And I needed to make a change. I was burned out and consulted some of those folks. Eventually, just cutting through all of this, found my way to UCLA and then took a job as a major gift fundraiser in the School of Medicine there. It was clear that I was not the best fundraiser or most experienced fundraiser in the lot, but I had some skills that that others didn't have: management skills, planning skills, strategic skills, that allowed my career to advance rather quickly in ways that were unpredictable, unforeseen.
When you think about the frontline work that you did do, any very memorable visits or donor experiences, conversations that stand out, ranging from a memorable ask that went well or asking for way too much money? I mean, anything stand out around specific experiences?
Oh, there's probably lots of them. Some of the ones that, lots of them. Some that went really, really well were things that at the time that we were doing around women's health and Revlon, and we spent a lot of time building a really significant program with lots of pieces that goes on to this day that I think really had high impact in women's health, particularly cancer. Lots of fun stories in there, lots of opportunities to meet interesting and dynamic people around there. There were a fair number of stories that didn't go so well, but I guess those are the ones that are real lesson character building. But
I think I got to start a second podcast that is just focused on, development gone wrong kind of, the B-roll of advancement work. I don't know, but
In reality, I think that's an interesting segue because a lot of the work we're going to talk about in the leadership lab is based on the real understanding that most of the important things that we learn in life, we learned not when things are going perfectly, when it's smooth sailing. Most of the important lessons I've learned in my life are when I had struggles, problems, failures. And we need to be sure as we lead our programs that we're not protecting people from those opportunities to learn. We've got to give people the opportunity to take some risks and actually to fail from time to time.
We will definitely dive into that. I'll just brief the audience on your kind of overall career trajectory, because you have uniquely, I think, balanced your time on the West Coast, leading the operation at UCLA. Leading the effort as VP of Development and Alumni Relations at Johns Hopkins, and then over the last 11 plus years, leading at Ohio State University. So that is a rare blend of West Coast, East Coast, Midwest. Are there any generalizable themes about West Coast fundraising versus East Coast versus Midwest, recognizing that in each of those environments, you're all over the place, but any generalizable reflections?
Probably lots. That's in a whole nother hour. Where I thought you were going to go was the public-private experience too.
And go there. Yeah.
And that's while there are big, significant differences between the public and the private world in the governance and other things, my transition from UCLA to Hopkins was actually pretty easy because the culture was really similar. Again, governance difference, decision-making differences, the private world was more nimble than the public was. But generally the understanding and the positioning of advancement were the same in those two places. When I came to Ohio State, I thought I had a pretty good understanding of what we meant by the culture of philanthropy. And I really, spent a fair amount of time in my early years here rethinking what I thought I knew about that culture and about what drives culture.
Thank you for sharing. Alex, let's kick it to you. Tell us quickly about your higher education journey and then ultimately when this world of advancement got on your radar.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is more so in counseling and HR consulting in a corporate setting. Prior to joining higher education, I worked for a Fortune 500 corporation. I worked for a startup that is now the size of a corporation. So different vibes and environments, but was always drawn to these people-related roles. One of my roles was leading the college recruiting program for a startup where we recruited new talent out of college. And that's really what led me to Ohio State originally about a decade ago to get my master's in higher ed administration. But during graduate school, I worked in advancement to support stewardship related programs for students and donors. And during that same time period, my now husband, Danny, received a full scholarship to Ohio State's law school. And at our campaign close event for Ohio State at that time, I had the ironic opportunity to walk the donor to her table and to be able to experience that firsthand and thank her and her family and really get what advancement meant for the community and for me and for Danny. I really liked what advancement represented. It was the business side of higher ed, people focused, goal oriented, results driven, you know, combined all these things that I had loved in my other roles, but it focused in a mission driven organization.
What an amazing opportunity. I mean, you know, so few of us, you know, no matter how well we do our stewardship, like to literally have that chance to walk with the donor and thank them is just amazing. And it had to be incredible for them as well. But I got to ask, was that really coincidental, or is that just part of
No,
the
it
grant?
truly was. It truly was. I asked her what her name was. Like I was like,
Michael, you know, I'm, Michael's sitting there thinking, no,
we were in like a, and you know, we were in a line and anyways, and took her to her table. And yeah, so anyways, it was very, it was the first time that I was like, oh, I get it, you know? So it was very cool.
I love that. And so you're feeling personally in your life, the benefits and the impact you are working while pursuing your master's. And then at what point did you think, okay, actually there's something here. This could be that career path. Obviously it's, you know, it's taken an interesting twist here over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was just, you know, that piece of it combined what I loved about business within higher ed, but still sat in this mission driven space. And I think I was fortunate enough in my time at Ohio State to work for leaders and alongside leaders that had a very different backgrounds. And I think that that made me feel like, wow, there's a place for me. And also being in a people focused role, I wanted to continue that and impact the profession in that way. And I think advancement is a space in higher ed that allows you to do that. I wouldn't say it's everywhere, but I would say in advancement, I feel that that is just as valued of how those people can support the organization in those types of roles. And so that's really what got me started. And I think, you know, in the leadership development space, when I think throughout my career, I learned most from those over time that didn't do the things as a perfect, ethical, empathetic leader. Like Mike said, you always learn from those people that don't do that. But I think it made me extra believe in it all in this space of, if you believe in your people, if you invest in your people, if you lead alongside instead of ahead, if you allow people to fail fast, that you'll thrive, your work will thrive, your results will be better. And I think advancement felt like the right space to do that.
Michael, tell me about the initial seed being planted for what has become the Advancement Leadership Lab. Sometimes this can be a slow march that, you know, ultimately leads to taking a step forward. Other times lightning can strike. So what was your experience in feeling like there was a gap in the landscape that needed to be filled?
Oh boy, that's a really interesting way to frame it, because there's both a slow march story and a flash story. So we can do this in segments. I think to be complete, let me go back to my Hopkins days, where I was trying to lead a program that was already incredibly strong, and trying to figure out how to improve it. And me, it's obvious, but the program is about its people, right? 75-80% of our budgets are personnel for the most part, not always across the board, but the largest percentage of our budget is people. The franchise is the people. So it goes without saying that in order to approve the program, you have to really focus on your team. But the quickest way it felt for me to make real improvement there was to focus on the managers and the highest impact, high potential employees. So literally based on some things that I had experienced personally in the YMCA, this is where the story goes back decades. I went home one weekend and started to design out how we might develop a program for leaders, particularly in development. Brought it back to my staff, and they rolled their eyes because it was long and expensive and overly complicated. But that then started a conversation with other leaders, particularly Mark Schell at Stanford, and folks buying the premise that if you could really impact the quality of your managers, you would recruit better, retain longer, hold people more accountable, and ultimately built the program. So we designed a program. That eventually, it's still going, that involves seven private universities. When I left the private world and came into the public world, I was no longer a part of that program, but still committed to the notion and to the topic. And we, now it has to become much of a we, spent a lot of time thinking about how do adults learn? How do adults learn particularly leadership? What's the difference between leadership and management? And we spent a lot of time talking with places that have done a good job of producing leaders, even places, many places outside of higher education. The place that survived, that surprised me the most was the military. And understanding the philosophy of the military in building leaders. Anyway, we took what we learned from the first program, combined with a lot of rigor, a lot of discipline, Alex's experience, Justin Fincher's experience in all come to play here. And so do the commitment of 10 VPs from big public universities who were all engaged in this topic and all thought it was really important and invested their own time and energy. So did CASE. A number of groups came together in partnership to think about the topic, improve the topic, improve the thinking, and building this together. So it's got a long, complicated history.
And Alex, at what point did this get on your radar? Like, when were you first introduced along that journey?
So when, you know, and Mike talking about those conversations, when there was an opportunity to say, you know, Mike said that OSU would take on basically the lab for the 3 years. There were some initial conversations of, but what would it look like? We know this is a need. And so that's really where I came in. I think I was working at Ohio State at the time. I think what the draw for me was in building this curriculum is that I was an advancement professional with a different kind of background who saw a gap in the leadership experience and worked with Mike and Justin Fincher and others to build this program and experience around that concept. I'm not a formal trainer. I'm not a check the box person. You know, it was just right place, right time when Mike said, okay, let's bring this to life. We have this vision. We've had these conversations about what the needs are in the industry. So it's just right place, right time to build something different that was less about tying a bow and more about sitting in the mess. And I think empowering this next generation of leaders to be even more empathetic and strategic and clear and impactful. So that was how it originally came about. But I remember our first meeting. It was myself, Mike, and Justin, and we just wrote on a big post-it note, what do we want people to feel at the end of this? And I think already it was different, right, of what that meant and what leaders really needed.
So what was on the post-it note?
You know, I think it was the start of what would become our curriculum, of this construct of the lab, of what people needed in terms of, sure, we had competencies and all of these things, but at the end of the day, it was about this unparalleled experience. And it was about principled leadership. It was about the relationships built to create a lifelong community. And we called it a lab because when you get to a certain level, it feels like there's not a lot of opportunities to fail. And so as we started brainstorming, you know, we're creating this environment with your peers to be able to grapple with the hard issues of leading in these really complex environments. So there were many words on the paper, but it's
I don't remember the post-it note exactly, but I do remember the meeting, and I remember locking into some of the concepts that you talked about, Alex, but words like journey came quickly to the fore. This isn't about a conference. It's not about a training event. That we believe people learn to be leaders over their lifetime. It was also very important, and we've never given up on this, that community and network were critical elements of this, that you had to, that you didn't do this journey alone, you did it together. And if those weren't on the post-it notes, they'd be on my new one.
And what it does say, if you go to leadershiplab.org, if you're listening, you can learn more about it. But when you look at the program right there, it says people, curriculum, and lifelong community, which you've all, you know, reinforced in this short conversation so far. But I do have to ask, This was a lot to take on, Michael. And at some point you might have considered, is this something Case should do, for example, or would a consulting firm that you've got a partnership with be better suited to add something like this to their curriculum versus, no, we actually feel like there is a need for a new enterprise with a specific focus. And if you're comfortable sharing, I'd just be curious to know how you thought about like building it in the current formation versus other possible paths.
Well, we did examine all kinds of options, particularly once after we got through the pilot. Well, let me go through. Before the pilot, we co-created with a lot of really smart people, including Case, including training representatives from all kinds of places, including GG&A, the consulting firm, providing a lot of support and a lot of energy. John Glear was very helpful. But as we went through the pilot and we realized we had something that was sustainable and probably scalable, the question of what kind of an organization to create and who to link it to was very important, and spent a lot of time talking about it. And we had lots and lots of options. We decided that the independent nonprofit gave us the most flexibility and the most opportunity to stay focused on what we thought were the core elements, the driving elements. It didn't have to be driven by making a profit. Didn't have to be driven by other concerns.
So tell me about the pilot, the quick summary of the overall experience, and just given the timeline, there had to be some ups and downs and unforeseen challenges along the way. And also even just the thought of framing it as a pilot sort of gave you an opportunity to, you know, double down or potentially say, we did it. It was a good experience, but that's where it ends.
Alex, maybe I'll start and then I'll let you fill it in. That the original notion with the 10 public universities that joined was that they would stay in for 3 years, that it would take us 3 years to determine whether or not this worked or didn't. And the idea at the time of the pilot was we were going to keep all of the variables consistent and the same. We were going to run the same program for 3 years identically. The only thing that would change would be the participants. And at the end of year one, we were pretty sure we were onto something pretty exciting and had such good feedback. We were eager to get into year two. Year two started, and then the pandemic happened. And the notion of keeping all the variables the same flew out the window. So we quickly, in the middle of year two, switched to online Zoom versions. Year three was completely and totally online. And so we ended up learning a lot more by changing those variables than we ever thought we would. And we can go into lots and lots more of that detail. But the idea was to be as scientific as we could under the heading of this laboratory model that we're using, and to see what we would learn and could prove and could focus on in the future as we grew.
Yeah, and the only other piece I would say is, I think COVID was an example, when the 10 schools said, no, we need to keep this, right? This is an important time to stay committed to leadership. I think we saw in real time how leaders were stretched. How do we deliver? How do we support our teams? Work and home is one and the same now. All of the lessons from the lab, they were starting to apply to this crisis. And so obviously we hope to not have a global crisis every year. But I think going back to the intentional use of the word lab, how do you land these things in a safe space so that you're positioned to succeed in the future when a crisis does come up on your campus? As you know, there's plenty of those always across campuses. And so I think during the pilot, in all of those challenges, and I also want to say shout out to Jill Cowan, who was our program manager during that time, who switched us to virtual and really kept us moving in that space. You know, I think what we learned is we have a belief system, we have a philosophy, it's why people keep coming back, that we would prioritize no matter what, engagement, connection, experiential learning. You know, we started to just realize what set us apart. I think when you go to a conference, I think sometimes you're supposed to take away something and then you repeat it to try and make something relevant. And I think in the pilot of this and then seeing through COVID, you know, we won't give you a playbook. We will give you big questions and wrestle with those with your peers, and they will challenge you. But the point is not to say, go do X on your campus. The point is exactly what happened in COVID, to take time to figure out what this experience means for you, for your teams, for your organizations. And so I think we just realized what start to distinguish us too.
And just to add to that, Alex, I think you're absolutely right. But we gave the VPs in year 2.5, I think, the opportunity to pull the plug. We said, look, budgets are tight. COVID's happening. We don't know how long this is all going to go. Should we just put this on pause? And to their collective credit, they said, this is a leadership moment. We need leaders now more than ever before. We're in, we're going to stay in, and we're going to make this a budget priority.
And I am sure that they, I mean, look, everybody needed somebody to talk to at that point. So the fact that you basically had a pre-wired peer group to be able to navigate this together had to just be amazingly therapeutic and helpful. I also have to ask, though, that sudden shift to virtual, and now we're still sort of living this debate of, you know, it was 100% in office. Now it's, you know, more in a hybrid model. There was a moment you all just described that was 100% virtual with no real other alternative. Did that stop people from building authentic relationships? Did it help?
We learned an awful lot that yes. What we can do online and virtually versus what we need to do in person.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that if we think of those three things of experiential learning, connection, you know, all of those kinds of concepts, we would focus on. And we would figure out, how do you do small group, big group, some of the things we were already doing in person. But to your point of, are they building authentic relationships? We were making sure that we were tweaking along the way to say also what was working. I mean, they were building it with us almost at the same time too, to figure out how this could be most beneficial to them. And I think that's why people feel so connected to the lab, is that they feel like they helped build it too. Even now, 5 years later, we always ask for constant feedback in formal and informal ways from our group. And I think that helped during COVID to figure out as well.
Well, let's break down the three pillars that are described: people, curriculum, and lifelong community. You've hinted at it, but who are the people? What are the titles? How do you decide who gets to participate in the lab?
So I'll start by saying, so yes, it's people, it's curriculum, it's lifelong community. When it comes to the people, we talk about, there's many facets of that. Yes, it's the participants, but it's also our alumni, who are the people who facilitate and coach for the program for future cohorts. It's also alumni who then come together in person and virtually each year for curriculum and to be able to stay connected and give their expertise and learn from others. But it's also the vice presidents. It's the Mikes across these 10 schools. Mike can talk to this even more. Mike, I'll let you in a second here. But that shared ownership piece is one of our biggest components of who is part of this. When we select people, it's leaders with potential, not potential leaders. It's people who are impact players in their organization, respected in their organization. It's the people who get it, right? There's a difference of people who can create a ripple effect and influence their organization. And yes, sure, it's about people who are senior enough in their career, but it's also about people who have led from where they are, no matter what. And I think that that is different, right? This isn't about sending someone to make them better or fix them or things like that. These are for our high performing folks that are able to take things to the next level and to make this ripple effect when they go back. But a component of that makes it different is the vice presidents being so present. Mike, I'll let you talk to that piece. I think it's such a unique component.
Oh, you were on a roll. It was so good. We probably spend more time talking with the VPs about who they should select than any other topic. And Alex has done a good job in that. But here's where we then differentiate management from leadership. We are not suggesting we want folks in the program who have the broadest management responsibilities. We think sometimes folks who have a very small org chart that reports to them are probably doing really complex jobs where they're having to use influence instead of line responsibility to get things done. So it's not about management or title. It is about leadership skills, and your ability to grow in that organization. It is also not about the promotion. We don't bring people, we're pretty explicit. We're very explicit about saying, if you think you're here because you're going to get promoted, you're in the wrong headspace. That's not what this is about. So you don't go through the lab and then go back to your institution and get promoted. But the most important thing that I think Alex has hit on is, unlike most things that most conferences or training events I send to people to, the VP's role here is well-defined and non-negotiable. And we spend a lot of time talking about this. If you are just going to pick three people and send them, you probably don't belong in the program. If you're going to engage with your cohort along the entire experience and the alumni now that are a part of your university, then we are all in the same place trying to create that community.
And that is an area that, it sounds obviously very pivotal. It's also an area that I would guess is getting harder as people are expected to be on the road more, as we're doing campaign events in 20 different cities in a way that we weren't. I mean, are you finding that aspect of kind of sort of demanding leadership engagement, just given getting 10 advancement VPs to have their calendars aligned? I mean, that is some complex mathematics. Like, is that getting harder, or have they just carved out the space?
Oh, I think you would expect it to be harder, and calendaring is never easy. Don't get me wrong, but folks are making this a high priority, and I think committing to it. And I think it doesn't take very long to understand the power of having a group of folks from across your organization, all with a mindset of growth, of the fact that leadership's important, of the fact that we need to understand the importance of taking calculated risks. So having folks, a cohort of folks and a growing cohort of folks, is very, very powerful. So I now have 15 alumni here on the Ohio State campus that I just had together 2 weeks ago. And, they make that a priority. They schedule that as a high priority, but then they talk to themselves about gathering on their own and making this a priority, making this time. They are the ones who are creating, who are telling us that this is important. We're not demanding it.
If I had been a fly on the wall of that gathering, Michael, or other versions of that, when you talk about the community aspect, the lifelong community aspect, what would I have heard? You know, what are some of the themes, statements that folks are making as they reflect on the benefits and where they want to go?
Well, we could do it at just the Ohio State level, but we can do it at the global level too. Back in April, we had an event in Atlanta. We started to call it a reunion and realized that wasn't the right name for it. But 75 of the 105 participants showed up for 4 days. That's extraordinary. And the themes you hear, one of the experiments of that was the first time we'd brought the four cohorts together. At that point, cohort five was still active, so they weren't included in this. But we weren't sure how the cohorts would mingle and mix. And the experience, even though some of them were 100% virtual, some of them were 100% in person, that mingling, that mixing, that common bond of having gone through something together made this really easy. Alex, you're the expert in this. You should build on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you also would hear is that for them, every time they come back to that space, to Mike's point of the cohorts mixing, it's this shared experience, and that ALL has become this microcosm of life as a senior leader. You know, feedback is not always about practicing feedback. It's about why we give feedback. It's about critical thinking, asking good questions. You know, in real life, you don't get to remove the things that you don't like. Nobody's job is ever going to be perfectly smooth, not without trouble or conflict. And so they enjoy that this is a space where they can come to create those experiences and to come in with one lens, with their own framework, and every time leave with a framework that might be widened, validated, expanded, maybe it's just affirmed, zoom in or out. But you hear a lot of that. And also you hear from them of what this means for them professionally and personally. They're taking it to their kids, to their houses, to work, to their teams. So you hear a lot of reflections in that space too, that this is about more than just, I took away these three outcomes. It's this lifestyle that I'm going to keep getting better and better at.
You also hear, and I think you touched on it a little bit, but we hear more and more of how much they call on that network when they have a question, when they have an issue. Mm-hmm. They pick up the phone and call somebody and say, I have this problem. What can you help me?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of academic leaders, if they were to listen to this, would be feeling a little bit jealous about what you're describing. 75 out of 100 or so people showing up for a 4-day, not reunion. You've got people calling on each other, curriculum. Have you thought about accreditation? I mean, you know, you're describing what sounds like a master's in leadership for this specific sector that we're serving, but you're not calling it that.
Oh, we flirted with that. But look, we're so busy right now trying to build this thing and expand and scale. The notion of accreditation is interesting. It's not that simple, and maybe someday. I'm not sure it adds anything to this right this minute. Is my problem.
I mean, Alex, just about the curriculum in general. I mean, we can kind of bring it home because I think we've talked, you've shared a lot around the people, around the community. Let's just talk a little bit about the curriculum. You've got four segments: framing leadership, developing others through culture, scaling your leadership, making meaning.
I will just quickly add to what Mike said as well in terms of the, we don't ever want that. The number one importance of this is around community, is around shared experience, is around the cohort-based learning. And so, you know, when you mention about some of those things, those are great and important, but we want to always make sure we're putting the profession's needs first, the cohort's needs first, all of those things. So it just came to mind. But when we think about curriculum, a lot of the things I mentioned in terms of this microcosm of life as a senior leader is what really we take of like the self, others, organization. That's not a novel concept, right? But it's how we do it, that we're more creating an environment for people to be able to process the process, ask hard questions, practice things to be ready for that next crisis, lean on each other. All we're doing is creating an environment for that. Obviously a little more complicated, but there's other pieces of the program that really allow for this intentionality. Yes, it's the curriculum and those exercises and how you're really analyzing yourself and your teams and your cultures and how you're going to influence and create this ripple effect. It's also about the on-sites. We have our different participating campuses are the ones that host, and there's a pride there and understanding unique cultures and the differences between them and the similarities between them and building these deep relationships. There's the community aspect that we talked about in being different in the than a conference. the sponsorship and engagement of the vice presidents that Mike talked about. And then the last piece I'll say is around this shared ownership. I could tell you all the exercises, but at the end of the day, the depth of this experience is not just about what ALL does. It's about if you engage and work for it, everyone gets more out of it. It's the hardest work to analyze who you are as a leader, the hardest work to say what's wrong, what's great, all of those things, and be willing to sit with that, sit with the messiness of that. And how do we do a good job of asking questions as opposed to solving things for people? And so if we do all of that, we're creating a space where people can feel confident in hopefully going back and creating this ripple effect across their campus. So those are just a couple of the things that we think about in terms of the curriculum, I guess more the meaning behind the curriculum.
I won't ask you the 10-year view, but maybe give me the 3-year view. Where do we go from here? Michael, what do you hope you can say if we're able to reconnect, let's say 3 years from now?
Well, we're in the process of the next expansion. We have 10 now big private universities that are going to start a second group. And we've met with them. They're picking their cohort. A year from now, we'll know a lot about whether we can run two of these side by side. After that, the notion of scalability is really interesting. How do you invite others into the conversation, into the group? But we have more scalable ideas than we have resources right now. We think there's a lot that we can build on here. But 3 years is a reasonable chance to say, I think there's probably going to be well more than 20 universities involved. We'll continue to try to focus a lot on the alumni experience. And by 3 years from now, I think have really enhanced that part of the program.
I agree. I think the only other piece I would add is that I hope, we talk a lot about our impact right now. Obviously, we work with all these universities, but what does it mean for the profession and paying forward to the profession? We're doing that. How do we scale that piece even more? More universities and allow them to have it. Not everyone can be part of this program, but everyone can benefit. All the things we talked about today, everyone can benefit from those experiences and lessons.
Well, give us a little free sample then as we bring it home today. For folks that can't quite yet benefit directly, a lesson or two that you feel like has really been universally well received by your alumni community?
Mike, do you want me to take
that? Yeah, I think that, why don't you do that?
All right. I think that everything we've talked about today, it's not, when I talk about we build community through tough conversations and holding each other accountable, we lift up diverse, unique perspectives. We bring forth perspectives, and the don'ts of what you really align with are just as important with the do's in which you align with when you expose yourself to those different perspectives. Not everything is for everybody. All of those things that we talked about today, that's for anyone. So I would say a lesson in the lab is take a minute. If someone comes in before you and jumps in, before you jump in, whatever you're jumping to, ask a few questions, ground yourself in the situation in a different way. I think we can never be curious enough, and you can create your own, who's in your cohort, who is in your corner, your journal for reflection, applying these lessons personally and professionally. And who are your impact players? I think asking that piece. The last thing I'll say is this is about, at the end of the day, making a commitment to the next level of leaders who are ready for complex challenges. And I think we're building this opportunity for people to connect and create community, but anyone can do that if they take a minute, seek to understand instead of seek to respond, and just commit to the concept of people.
My freebie, I think I knew you'd do a better job than I would, Alex, but the one thing I thought you were going to say is that we spend time talking about and using the image of getting up on the balcony and looking down at what's going on. And if we can help people to say, all right, I'm in the heat of battle. I'm sitting around a table with five people and hammering out a hard issue. What would happen if I got up on the balcony and looked down on this? What would I observe? What would I understand that's different than my seat at the table? And that skill of being on the balcony and looking down on the action is one we keep coming back to. And that's not that hard to develop if you're conscious of it. Anybody can do it at any particular time. But once you develop that ability or that mindset, it's pretty powerful.
I think that aligns well. Take a minute and get up on the balcony. I think those are hand in hand for sure.
Well, I just saw a survey this week that shared that the top three issues for chief advancement officers right now are one, staff morale, two, burnout/uncertainty, three, staff shortages and resignations. And I suspect that reality is partly why you've had such a strong reception to the Advancement Leadership Lab. It is filling a void in a way that is, in some ways, Alex, as you said, very generalizable, but centered around this work of advancement, the specific sector, and creating that relationship and network that is really going to, I'm sure, impact these people for decades to come.
I believe you're right. And we're trying to figure out what the right ROI measures are. One of them is retention. It's a little harder to measure some of those other things, morale and whatnot, but we can measure retention. And we're pretty proud of what we're seeing.
Well, closing thoughts. First of all, thank you for your time and for sharing, for the amazing undertaking that it has been to get this going. As I mentioned, I just caught up with Josh Newton from Emory University earlier this week, who is a new participant and was raving about it. And when I think about what he was raving about, you know, so much of it is just that community aspect, being able to be in the room with people that have, different backgrounds and perspectives, but a shared set of challenges and now relationships. And so wishing you the best. If people want to learn more, what's the best way to do that? If they want to get in touch with each of you, what's the best way to do that as well?
Alex, probably best to have folks contact you through the through the website.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a connecting point through the website. So if they want to learn more or just talk about leadership.
And that is leadershiplab.org. Check it out. Also, Alex and Michael are both on LinkedIn, and definitely would encourage everybody here to follow along and learn more. Any closing thoughts, Alex, you first, then we'll take it to Michael.
Yeah, just thanks for having us. I think that more than ever, these topics are really important. So appreciate you raising this concept. I will just say none of this happened alone, from myself, from Mike, anyone. It took a lot of people to get where we are. Our board, as I mentioned, Jill Cowan, Justin Fincher, our alumni now who help run the program. And obviously, Mike, who helped bring the vision to life. So.
Yeah, Brent, thanks for having us. My closing thought, we hit on a little bit, but the thing that has surprised us most, I think, or at least me the most, has been what we've called the ripple effect here. We expected that this would have high impact on people's day-to-day jobs. We hoped that it would have an impact on the teams that those folks supervise. Didn't dare to think about the impact of the culture on the institutions that are a part of this. That has been amazing. On the had no idea that people would start to apply some of these things to their family lives, as Alex said, and didn't really have an understanding of how much the vice presidents would change. I personally have grown over the last 5 years as a result of my participation, and I would hazard to say that each of the VPs has as well. So the ripple effects are really powerful here.
Oh, I love it. I love the way that you frame that. And frankly, I feel like the whole advancement sector is one big ripple effect, right? When you think about those those interventions for that student, that experience, that connection that leads to the first job that then snowballs into a principal gift someday. I think it's a beautiful way to frame it. And I'm glad that you're already experiencing it, even just a couple of years post-formation. And I have no doubt that effect will continue to grow and scale. Thank you both for your time today. Look forward to continuing to get to know you and learning more. I would encourage our audience to follow along, reach out, mention that you heard about ALL on the Raise podcast. And with that, I'll close today's episode with Michael Eicher, who serves as Senior Vice President for Advancement and President of the Ohio State University Foundation, and Alex Lawrence, who serves as Executive Director of the Advancement Leadership Lab. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Yeah.